They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us today all the way from Arizona on the other side of the world almost, we have Dave Russell. Dave has sued the state of Arizona, and we're going to find out why. But first, we're going to find out who Dave Russell is. Dave, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And please tell us who you are, what you do, and why are you suing the state of Arizona?
Shu, I'm actually a community manager, and I'm not your atypical community manager. We had, of course, the same horrific HOA that you hear about all the time. Our last two managers or management companies ended up in prison. So
probably again, a good place for them?
It's probably a very good place for them, but unfortunately, it's probably not enough time served. So I became active in this community. We butted heads with the board. The place turned into a crime-ridden disaster that, of course, was falling apart, and there was no accountability for the money. So after a couple of rounds of getting rid of property managers and firing management companies or watching them being hauled off in handcuffs, I kind of decided that, you know what, it might be easier if I just run the place. So we had a total turnover of the board, and I took on the job to try to help out my fellow homeowners here.
Were you on the board when all this happened?
I was not on the board. We didn't even have a board meeting, of course. Big surprise there, right? If anybody came to protest, all of a sudden they instantly didn't have a quorum, so they would cancel the meetings.
Hmm. And so without meetings, homeowners got no input?
Nope. None whatsoever. Actually, what they got is a big healthy dose of attitude. Big shocker there, right?
Describe one of those healthy doses of attitude, will you? What happened?
Well, sure. I came into a board meeting one day, and I said, hey, first of all, it's the law. I would like to see the financial records. They directed me to their attorney, as usual. And I said, where's our money going? The roofs are leaking. The place is falling apart. There's crime and criminals in these rental units. What's being done about it? The response back from one of the board members was, hey, if you don't like it, you can always sell.
So move, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm, move. Yeah, sell your unit. And, of course, I informed him that, you know, that wasn't an option because after the crash, my unit was worth less than I paid for it. I would actually take a substantial loss. So me and my neighbors got together and we said, we're not putting up with it anymore. So the irresponsible board members were banished, and the property was turned over to a new board, and it's a great board. It's a great HOA now, but, you know, in the next 2 or 3, 4 years, if I decide to retire here, you know, even if these HOAs have a good board now, 5 or 6 years from now, they may not have a good board, and you go right back to the same issues and problems that you had before.
One thing we like to say on this show is you're one election away. Because I'll have people call me up and say, oh, you know, I hear about all these problems, but
It's not all of them, because we have a wonderful association, a wonderful board. We don't have these problems. First of all, they probably don't know that they do have them. But we always tell them, you're just one election away from having everything turn around.
And in some cases, just one board member away. You could have that reasonable board, and that one reasonable board member, if he or she has enough of it, they leave, you're done. Or one community manager that is a tyrant.
Well, one of the big problems in HOAs also is, and let's not give them a pass, and that's the HOA attorney.
Oh, indeed. The vultures.
Yeah, the leeches. The leeches. Now, I'm going to tell you up front, I have some friends who are HOA attorneys, or attorneys, period, and a couple of them who are HOA attorneys, and I don't believe that they would do some of the things that we hear about, but, I don't know that.
Well, Sue, I think it's like any profession. You have good cops, bad cops. You have probably hopefully some HOA attorneys who are doing what's in their best interest for their associations, but far too often they don't use due diligence. I mean, we can take a case here where a HOA they absconded, the property management absconded $3.4 million allegedly.
Wow.
From this HOA. And the question there is, where was the HOA attorney? They hadn't done an audit. Now, it's state law that requires you to do it here in Arizona, to do an audit, yet it was never done. So when they suspected this $3.4 million theft, where was the HOA attorney advising them beforehand? Hey, you know, we've noticed you haven't done audits. You know, that's the law. I mean, so, you know, I think there might be a few good HOA attorneys out here, but I would say they are far and few between.
Yeah, finding them is like finding or looking for hen's teeth, right?
It's like looking for a needle in a haystack.
One thing, since we're talking about audits, that most board members don't know is when you get the audit, it's going to be a whole lot of numbers.
Indeed.
Make sure that you get a copy of the management letter.
Absolutely.
Because that's where you're going to find the information. If you're like me and the numbers don't mean a whole hell of a lot to you, the management letter will spell it out. And a lot of board members don't know to ask for it because, look, that's not what they do regularly, right?
That's correct. You know, you have, hopefully, some folks who are trying to do what's in the best interest for their communities. But again, it's lack of board member training. They don't understand. And of course, when you have this, you know, a significant amount of numbers and they're all over the place, they're very hard to, even for folks who have some experience in accounting and finance. You know, these are written differently than all other financial reports that you'll see for other corporations. And sometimes, you know, those numbers are deceiving. You know, cash flow or, it's just very difficult to interpret these. But, yes, absolutely the management letter is where you're going to find any deficiencies, and if you have a good certified public accountant doing those deficiencies should be well noted.
Well, I think you should have a good auditor do that, because otherwise you're wasting your money. Having a member of the association do it is not a good idea.
No.
Having the manager do it is not a good idea. Putting a committee together to do it is not a good idea. Hire a professional. It is worth every penny. And make sure you've got the management letter.
Indeed, because if this association would have invested $1,200 to $1,400 a year, now their dues there at that HOA are $300 a month. So this is kind of a pricey place out in Scottsdale. If they would have invested that $1,400, $1,200 dollars to a CPA to audit their books, it might have saved them $3.4 million.
I think that's a case of being penny wise and pound foolish, don't you think, Dave?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But again, we need to train these boards a little better. There needs to be better education. They need to know what they need to do. And when you're having to comply to a law, you would think that the HOA attorneys would advise them correctly, but unfortunately, as we all know well, that's not the case.
What about the managers? We keep hearing about, oh, we've got to have CAI credentialed managers, and they have to be licensed, and we have to be able to hold them accountable, and they're the professionals, and they're going to guide the board.
Well, that
and
is
you're a manager. Go for it.
I'm a manager. That's the biggest misconception and fallacy that I think I've heard in years.
Thank you, Dave. I like you already.
Yeah, you know, far too often I've seen managers here. It's a misappropriation of money. They're, directed by the board of directors who, each one has their own personal agenda and what they think needs to be done. It's not the right thing to do. Community managers should be basically overseeing the daily operations. You know, you wouldn't hire a brain surgeon to work on your car. And that's the problem here. You know, you have to leave these things, like the audits, to the experts, the certified public accountants who do have licenses. And if they do fail to disclose things, or inconsistencies in the financial records, they're held accountable. They have a state license. Licensing HOA managers, what for? Who's going to train them, the CAI?
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's the big problem. Make them real estate agents?
Yes.
That doesn't work either. If they're going to steal, they're going to steal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you need a good manager, whether you're managing an HOA or whether you're managing a hotel or a restaurant or a gas station or a hospital. If you can manage.
Absolutely.
And you're ethical and honest. You're going
Boy, there's two words that don't go well with HOAs, do they? And it's also what your manager's interests are. You know, we're kind of self-managed here. We have our own on-site staff who does all of our maintenance and repairs. We save tens of thousands of dollars a year by, actually having folks do it instead of manager Dave, who has five friends in the roofing business and six friends in the landscaping business and four mm-hmm. friends in the pool business. And, they used to call them kickbacks in my days. Now they call them finder fees.
Oh.
Very clever word that they use, finder fees. So I think that HOA should really, really get away from these big property management companies and really consider the fine art of self-management. It will reduce the dues. It will keep people honest. The contractors aren't going to walk out the door with your money.
That's true. That's true. And a lot of times you'll hear CAI say, you have got to hire these professionals because that's what they do and they're well-trained and they know what they're doing. But you know what? If you've got manager Dave there or anybody, manager Sue, whoever's on site, making sure that the employees of the association are doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is, in essence, what the manager does. The association attorney guides you through the legal stuff, and then you act as the conduit. I mean, the manager does what the board wants it to do.
Absolutely.
Ultimately, the board makes these decisions, but I have found that board members don't know what they're doing. Board members haven't got a clue as to what's going on. They turn to the manager, who has a different agenda, and quite often the manager doesn't know what they're doing. It's not rocket science, Dave. It's not.
Absolutely. It's not rocket science here. I'll just give you one example. We have a 17-acre property here, 15 buildings, 256 individual condominiums, and our landscaping a year was around $70,000.
Whoa.
And that was replaced with one employee who does it for a fraction. So, it's all about, those little things that just add up. Well, it doesn't seem unreasonable to pay that amount, but, they push these management companies push for their CAI-approved contractors,
mm-hmm.
who you're going to find are 2 to 3 times higher than any other landscaper or contractor that you hire. It's just a waste of money. and it ends up costing the homeowners a lot of money in the end.
And CAI is now pushing for more and more fees. They want professional board members. They want transfer fees. They want the ability to increase dues at any time they want. I mean, it's like a huge money pit.
It's a money pit. It's a vortex, is what it is.
Yeah, it is. But now, we've talked about the problems in HOAs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only problem. Some of the legislators are probably swallowing CAI pills.
Indeed.
And they're not necessarily the best gatekeepers for what they should be doing. And so you're suing them. Tell us about it.
I am. This is a... just an awful piece of legislation. I'll give you a little background. It started out in 2012 as Senate Bill 2513, which was actually vetoed by the governor. This is what's called an omnibus bill, or as we call them, garbage pail bills. It's a bunch of legislation that's all kind of log rolled into one. So last year, they resurrected this piece of legislation and tried to get it to fly. Well, it didn't fly except for the very last day of the session when one of our representatives here, Michelle Ugente, tried to cleverly attach it to a campaign finance bill in the waning hours of the legislative session at the very end. So our good friend George Toropoli here in Arizona, the homeowner advocate of all homeowner advocates, filed a lawsuit against the state claiming that they had log-rolled the bill. It's fundamentally unconstitutional here. We have what's called the single subject rule in as part of our constitution here in Arizona. And lo and behold, that lawsuit was successful, and the HOA provisions of that bill were stricken. But to no surprise, they brought it back again this year. And you need to look no further than the stakeholders of the bill, who were the Arizona Association of Realtors, the Community Association Institute, and the Arizona Association of Community Managers, which basically is an offshoot of the CAI. It was a bunch of individual bills, all log rolled into one. Individually, either one of these groups would have never let most of this pass. The CAI convinced the Arizona Association of Realtors that if we all work together, we can all get what we want, and except for the homeowners. And after the housing market crash, most of these realtors are kind of now managing rental properties to subsidize their dwindling incomes. And unfortunately, their realtors ran into a little snafu when it came to renting units in HOAs. We have what's called the crime-free program in here in Mesa. It's called the TriStar Crime Prevention Program, and that program just simply requires that all tenants submit a background check and a photo ID of their tenants to the association just to verify that they're not criminals or sex offenders or drug dealers. So everybody teamed up with everybody, and some deals with the devils were made. And another really, really bad provision in this bill. They built this out to be some kind of homeowner's rights bill, and they incorporated a bunch of legislation such as flags and for sale and for rent signs that were already on the books. They were already law. So they sugarcoated this thing, or as I like to call it, putting lipstick on a pig and sending it out to the market. But one of the real problems with this bill is that this bill allows HOA management companies and HOA managers to self-represent in small claims court, which means the HOA manager or any of their association employees can take Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner to court, those folks who probably never step foot in a courtroom. So it's the inexperienced homeowner versus the HOA gurus who deal with contracts and legal issues all the time. So it's a terribly bad bill. We fought and fought and fought and contacted our legislatures. And not only is this bill just a bad bill in general, this bill is also fundamentally unconstitutional.
Let me go back to last year's bill. If I understand, there was some good stuff. I do believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I do believe that there was a provision in there that prohibited municipalities from mandating HOAs.
The one of the only great things in that bill. And, of course, when you introduce this legislation and everybody's made a deal with the devil to get their section passed, you know, individually, half of these bills, standalone, would have never survived. So what they did is they put in the good and the bad and the ugly instead of introducing these as single bills. And, yes, that's a very, very good provision. But on the other side, you have probably some laws in there that will undoubtedly be more harmful to homeowners than it'll do any good.
But you know what? You have actual bans, but then municipalities can always make life a little more difficult for a developer if he's coming in and there is no HOA.
So, indeed.
So there's a de facto mandate and a de jure mandate. So would that have prevented that?
Well, you know, you really have to look at this, and of course, there's rumor that one of the municipalities here may be challenging that provision in the bill. So I think that no developer should be mandated to form an HOA. I think this is a very good piece of legislation. Standalone, it would have been an exceptional piece of legislation.
Is that part of the bill this year?
That's part of the bill this year. This is all
so it's still
in
there.
The same bill.
Mm-hmm. So it's still there. So they were sued last year. They lost. And they went ahead and did it again this year?
They did it again this year. Now, they kind of did it more cleverly. There was actually two bills, one in the House and one in the Senate. They were mirror image bills. And unfortunately, in the state of Arizona, bills can be substituted for other bills. So they drug this out through this big, lengthy process, making it appear that both of these bills were pretty much finished and they were not going to pass. And, of course, they were resurrected in the last days of the legislative session. We had a murder here. This was a very, very bad property. We had a murder here of a 19-year-old woman and her unborn baby on our property. And this was during a drug deal gone wrong. So we brought in the Crime Free, we brought in the TriStar program to help keep this community a safe place to live. And, of course, you know, the realtors teamed up with the CAI and the Arizona Association of Managers, and they all had their agenda, and they all threw it into a big pot of omnibus stew, as I call it. And, you know, that's the problem with these omnibus bills and HOA legislation. When you put too many things in a bill, there are going to be those either intended or unintended consequences that, you know, the legislatures who are voting on these, they're just not aware of. You know, we try to make our legislators aware, but unfortunately they don't return the phone calls, they don't return the emails, they're on to bigger and better things. So standalone, there was several provisions in this bill that I think are exceptional quality pieces of legislation that actually might help the homeowner, but allowing homeowners to be sued by their HOA in small claims court and that unequal representation, these homeowners, like I said, half of them, you know, haven't even stepped foot in a courtroom. And Representative Michelle Ugente, you know, she said, I feel very responsible to the stakeholders. You know, what does that say right there? Stakeholders.
Stakeholders are the homeowners.
Well, there was no homeowners involved in this. That's the big problem. There was nobody representing the homeowners, unless you want to count the CAI, who claims that they represent the homeowners. So you have three groups here that, you know, really could care less about the homeowners. It's all about making money. And, of course, here's another big problem with this piece of legislation and this self-representation in court issue is we all, those of us who know the bill and know the legislation and been stamping this out for years, is there is no set amount of money that these HOA managers, our property managers, are going to charge back to the associations for their time spent in court or dealing with legal matters. They're not going to do it for free. I think we can all agree upon that. I would only imagine that some of these property management companies taking their homeowners to court and billing the association back for quote-unquote legal fees, they could potentially charge 5 to 10 times more than what a regular attorney would charge.
So you're looking at fee shifting as well. So the manager can go to court and act as an attorney without a license, basically.
Absolutely.
So where's the legal profession jumping up and down on that one?
And, I'm baffled.
And then they can charge the association for representing the association in small claims court. And, of course, you've got this fee-shifting thing that says, you know, if you're going to take the homeowner to court, then the homeowner gets to pay the bill. So manager says to the board, don't worry about a thing. It's not going to cost the association a dime because we'll get the homeowner to pay for it.
Exactly.
Am I on the right track here?
I think you're on the right track. Now, this is, you know, like I said, everybody in this, these stakeholders, each one of them had a piece of the pie, and some of them carved out a little bit more than the rest of them had. So this is a typical case of special interest groups, which is this Arizona Association of Community Managers, and I'm sure the CAI was behind this as well. It's just another moneymaker, another way to pillage the homeowners out of their assessments and dues every month. I can see where, because there is nothing stated in this bill, what these property management companies can charge back for all this time. I could see it now. Well, we had to spend 15 hours for legal research. We had 2 hours in court. There's travel expense to and from court. I don't think it'll ever end. I think this is just another way to fleece the homeowners and pad the pockets of these property managers and these property management companies.
I got a call, or I got an email from someone in another state, not your state, not my state, and I'm not going to tell you where.
Okay.
Who's having problems because he is being charged $5,000 by the association attorney to collect $400 and some.
Indeed, not untypical.
Not untypical, except
no.
That I want to remind everyone that Maryland did enact legislation capping what attorneys could charge and what they could shift over to the homeowner.
Exactly. But what teeth does that bill or that law have?
You know, that's a good point.
That's
a really good point that you're coming up with. You're absolutely right, Dave.
Right. None of these laws that are passed, we passed a law here in Arizona that the homeowner could have the financial records. I get emails every single day. There is not one homeowner who has fought their HOA to get their financial statements without having to use an attorney. There's nobody to call. There's no teeth, no consequences for them not doing this. So these laws that are being passed, first of all, some of them are fundamentally unconstitutional. And the second part is that they're not worth the paper they're written on. There's no consequences if these are violated.
We're talking to Dave Russell. He's a manager in Arizona. He decided he didn't like what was going on in his condo, so he became a manager, and he's been managing it. And he's now suing, in case you just joined us, he is now suing the state for violating their own laws. Incredibly, they did the same thing last year. They were sued last year. The state lost, and yet they're doing it again. Now, you're fighting, Dave, you're fighting Senate Bill 1314?
That's another one of my lawsuits.
Wait, it's a different one.
Well, the second one is another log-rolling escapade. And actually, this bill is entitled Senate Bill 1314, Board of Barbers Continuation.
I wondered why you sent me that link.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because this is reminiscent of last year's HOA bill that was thrown out. The same legislature and the waning, which is Representative Michelle Ugente of Scottsdale, she did exactly the same thing she did with the HOA omnibus bill last year. She waited till the last minute, till the last day of the session at 1 o'clock in the morning, and tacked on the continuation of another 11 state agencies, and then tacked on a completely unrelated provision relating to underground storage tanks.
What?
Yes. You know, this is the problem with our legislature and how these surreptitious bills like last year's bill get through. We have lawmakers who, now Representative Michelle Ugente, who created a mirror image bill in the House, just happens to be a real estate agent. And she also sits on the, she's the chairman for the Committee of Government. And then if you look on the Senate side, where 1482 was finally officially passed, that sponsor was Senator Gail Griffin from Hereford, who also just happens to be a realtor, and she is also the chairman of the Committee on Government. This kind of legislation and this kind of log rolling, we thought they would have learned last year from the HOA bill that you cannot log roll these things. The state has a very, very clear single subject rule. And, of course, special interest groups, again, dominating the legislature, listening to special interest groups such as the CAI, the Arizona Association of Community Managers, and now it seems like they've teamed up with the Arizona Association of Realtors. So, you know, it's got to stop somewhere. We asked that Representative Ugente last year was disciplined for her blatant violation of the Arizona State Constitution by the House Ethics Committee Chairman, Phil Lovis, and he didn't see a thing wrong with what she did.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
So which is why she's doing it, again.
That's why she's doing it again. There's no consequences in Arizona, apparently, for passing unconstitutional legislation and bringing it up again. And one important part I want to make about this bill is when George Trefoil William Brown sued last year and had this bill thrown out, they left the statutes on the law, on the law books and on the Arizona government website. So it was very confusing when you went in to check these HOA laws. They were deemed invalid, but they didn't do anything to repeal them. So instead of creating a separate piece of legislation this year to repeal those laws that were found unconstitutional, they wrapped them into Senate Bill 1482. So the only way that these unconstitutional provisions from last year that the court agreed to, it was passed unconstitutionally, and they need to be taken out of the books, so they incorporated them in the repeals into Senate Bill 1482. So if the legislature did not vote yes on this, those laws would have still remained on the books. So they were almost forced to pass this to remove the invalid statutes from law.
Now that sounds awfully complicated.
Yeah, what it means is when George and William Brown last year got an order from the court, and the court said, hey, these laws are unenforceable.
So wait a minute. So their lawsuit was after it had been approved, after it had been passed.
Yes.
So they came in and tried to nullify the existing law.
Yes.
Okay.
And they did so because, of course, Representative Michelle Ugente from Scottsdale attached this as an amendment to a campaign finance bill. So it was a violation of the single subject rule. So the Attorney General and the court agreed that you can't violate the single subject rule. So the provisions in the HOA bill were tossed out the courthouse window. And at the beginning of the legislative session, they should have passed a bill that repealed those invalid statutes, where the judge said, absolutely, these are invalid because they were passed unlawfully. And so they apparently, Senator Gail Griffin and Michelle Ugente got pretty clever. So they just wrote the repeal into the new bill that absolutely brings back the old bill all over again.
Wow.
Yeah. So that would leave, you know, if this bill did not survive, the unconstitutional laws that the judge said couldn't be there see where I'm going with this? They forced the legislature to vote yes on this bill again.
So wait a minute. So the court said that it was unconstitutional.
It was passed unconstitutionally.
Okay.
So when because it was a violation of the single subject rule, you can't attach, a law about computers to a law about pool pumps.
So that's a rule and not part of the Arizona Constitution.
Yet that is part of the Arizona Constitution.
Okay, so then it was deemed to be unconstitutional. They cannot, the legislature cannot overturn the Constitution. I mean, they can't.
They can't violate it, no. Absolutely
they can't. Well,
not.
They can't. Well, what they're trying to do is trying to overturn it.
Sure.
And they can't do that.
And that's what we've been telling them for years. And that is why I decided with this other Senate Bill 1314, the barbershop bill, that it has to end somewhere. And this is how these surprise and surreptitious legislation takes place. I mean, just like last year, that HOA bill would have never passed, but they tacked it on at the last minute. And I'm sure that our fine representatives who were sponsoring the bill went to the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, who also gained support when he actually took this bill off the Senate consent calendar last year. But it was kind of like a contempt of legislature. How dare one of our constituents sue us for a piece of legislation that we put our autograph on? So,
we're not representing you guys, right?
Exactly. So it's kind of like contempt of cop. And before all this had is, you know, two sponsors, one in the House and one in the Senate. And after it was deemed unconstitutional and resurrected again this year, it looked like everybody put their name on it, including the Senate President Andy Biggs, who took it off the consent calendar last year and wouldn't even let it go any further than it was. So it's just shocking, and I'm just always amazed on these special interest groups and how they can get their legislation passed. You know, they hired a high-dollar lobbyist firm here to get this passed. And they knew it's fundamentally unconstitutional. We told them it was, and they continue to go.
Why is it that all the morons run for office and they seem to win?
Well, I have no idea. We've been trying to figure that out for years. And let me tell you what: in the state of Arizona, there is no shortage of legislative idiots.
You know what? You don't have a monopoly on that. Trust me, you don't.
I hope not. We're a little more bizarre and a little more insane, I think, than most.
I don't think so, but you know, we have our share, and I've heard of a bunch of them across the country. So why is it that we keep voting in these idiots?
Well, I think we vote them in, and I think what's happening, Shu, is these special interest groups, such as the CAI, it's corporate dollars. I don't think they're idiots when we get them in there. I think they're idiots when they've been there for a year or more. And these groups and organizations, I mean, I've followed money from the Arizona Association of Realtors to Representative Michelle Ugente. Now, here we have two realtors passing a bill that the realtors want. You know, it's a terrible conflict of interest. But unfortunately, in the state of Arizona, it's not considered a conflict of interest. As long as a law benefits nine or more people, it's not considered a conflict of interest.
People, individuals?
Yes, individuals. It's the most insane law or rule I think I have ever heard. As long as a piece of legislation benefits more than nine people, they don't even have to worry about it being a conflict of interest.
So pick nine CAI-affiliated attorneys in the state of Arizona.
Absolutely.
Or nine realtors in the state of Arizona. Anything will pass.
Absolutely. And it's not considered a conflict of interest, where in most states you would have to file out forms that it could be a potential conflict of interest, and in Arizona you don't.
Well, Texas saw that. That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dave Russell. You're listening to Fairfax Radio. And we're talking about suing the state of Arizona. Now, you've got two lawsuits going, right?
Indeed.
Just two of them?
Just two, for
are,
now.
Are you suing them on your own, or do you have other co-complainants or co-plaintiffs?
No, actually, this is on my own. So it's a very lengthy and long process with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sheets of papers and motions. It's quite involved. It's not something for the timid, that's for sure.
Are you representing yourself, or do you have an attorney?
I'm representing myself. I filed all these pro se. They're so fundamentally unconstitutional. I just don't see how a court could ever allow it. So in the sake of saving the taxpayers some dollars fighting this, I've decided that I would take it on myself.
Well, I'm going to thank you on behalf of the residents of Arizona, because, you know, quite often we just sit back and think to ourselves, well, let someone do it. There ought to be a law, right?
There ought to be a law. And, you know, just on the Senate Bill 1482 lawsuit, I can imagine that, you know, if I hired an attorney, we'd be talking around, for the work that's done now, about $100,000. These things are very expensive to litigate, and they're very messy.
Tell me what's in that bill. What are the different provisions in 1482 that are good and bad? I mean, there must be something good, right? Is the ban on mandates in that bill?
Right. The best provision of the bill, and standalone, of course, this would have been outstanding, it's a requirement of planned communities are prohibited. That is just an awesome piece of legislation. I would like to find out who's responsible for that section and shake their hand. Of course, we have no idea who that would be.
Can you find out, Dave?
I have been trying to find out for a very long time, and I am getting no answers down at the state capitol. Of course, I'm not the most popular kid down there right now, so that is absolutely, I think, one of the best pieces of legislation. And that's another problem, Shu, that we're getting into here, is all these state laws. You know, if you have great laws in California and you have terrible laws in Arizona, you know, we need to have one on the federal level that pretty much takes all the good HOA law from the 50 states that we have now and get some federal legislation, some national federal legislation on HOA, something with some teeth into it. It does no good for one state to have a great set of laws protecting homeowners while the other state lags behind. It's something that, you know, I'm gonna go out on a limb here. Fundamentally, the most UAS Constitution, that the state says, hey, look, you know, here's the Constitution. You can't interfere in a private contractual agreement. So arguments have been made, and that's one of my arguments in my lawsuit, that the state can't interfere in a private contractual agreement between, say, me and my homeowners association. So fundamentally, out of the gate, a lot of these laws are unconstitutional, and I think we're going to see a lot more challenges on that. So the only way, and then, of course, if they do interfere, they can interfere in a contractual agreement, but they have to have a legitimate purpose, because when they interfere in these contracts, the state is literally enacting police powers to do so. So I think we're going to see a lot more of these HOA bills on the state level challenged for their constitutionality.
I had a representative here in Virginia years ago when they did the fining, and I said, didn't anyone tell you that it was unconstitutional? He says, yeah, a lot of people come up and tell us something's unconstitutional because they don't like it, but we don't pay it, no mind. And that seems to be pretty much the attitude. This was years ago. I'm a lot smarter than I was then. I was just beginning to get involved at that point. What they're doing, if you notice, is they're enacting what's known as enabling legislation.
And
they're couching it in language that says, if you, the homeowners, adopt it, or if you agree to it, then we will allow it by statute. It's either in the governing documents when you buy the house, the brand new ones, and by buying the house, you are deemed to have agreed to it. So now that becomes part of the contract. You can, it gives you permission to go in and enact or adopt that law or that provision, that power, and that becomes part of the contract.
Exactly.
I think this, in, I you know, retroactively, I think one thing that we need to do is if there's enabling legislation that is good for the homeowners, make it 100% of all owners have got to agree with it. When I first got involved in this, the standard, the community standard, was that, you know, if you wanted to amend the governing documents, it was 95% affirmative vote for the first 10, 20, 15 years, whatever the time was, and then it was 75%. CAI then said, oh, that's just not right because you'll never get it passed. So now they want to make it a simple majority, 51%. I don't think that half of your neighbors should have the right to make those changes.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And we also have to be very, very careful of a provision that you're going to find in a lot of community documents in the CC&Rs. And that's a little provision that allows the board of directors to make reasonable changes to the rules and regulations of the association. This is a terrible provision. If any HOA has it, they need to have it stricken out of their governing documents. But, you know, they find ways to circumvent these laws.
Oh, yeah.
They find ways to circumvent, you know, reaching a quorum or having the majority do it. And that's one of their favorite provisions in a set of HOA governing documents.
You know, last year, or earlier this year, we had some really, really bad bills. I mean, it was a bonanza for CAI.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went down, and the CAI lobbyist, Pia Trigiani, was down there. And you know, we're arguing with some of the bills in the committee hearings, because if we could kill them in committee, then, it was worth it, because getting to the, or subcommittee hearings, if we could kill them in the subcommittee hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the subcommittee hearings and we testified against them. And so Pia's sitting in the back and she says, if they don't like it, they can change it. If they don't want this, they can amend the rules in their governing documents. They can amend the covenants. So in other words, the onus was on the homeowner to change something that they're getting passed. So I turned that around later on, and I said, you know what, if anybody wants this, then they can vote for it. But don't make it, don't shove it down everybody's throat. And she said, oh, you could never do that. It would never pass. It's very difficult to get the homeowners to agree on this, so we have to make those decisions for them.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds all too familiar.
You've heard that one before?
It sounds all too familiar, especially here in Arizona. You know, these legislatures try to fix what they think is the problem with homeowners associations. I believe that some legislatures do it honestly and earnestly, and of course then we have some legislatures who are getting their pockets padded by the special interest groups.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that seems to be one of the big problems. I mean, if you want to know how something got passed, just start following the money.
Be aware also that if you look at because there are limits on how much you can donate, you can find individual members who are donating substantial sums of money. Follow them back, and you will see a tie with CAI. So if you're only allowed to give so much, then, and in some states they are capped, then CAI will give the money and give the max, but then they'll get individual members of CAI to donate the max as well. So
oh, absolutely.
They circumvent that.
They circumvent it all the time, and actually the PACs and the super PACs out here are allowed to give about 3 to 10 times more under a new state law. So now we really have a big issue here in Arizona where, you know, they can pretty much donate as much money as they want. And again, you just have to follow the money on these bills. You have to look at the who the sponsors were of these bills. You know, we have two realtors that both happen to sit in the as chairman of the government committees in their respective committees. It's just, it's kind of insane. It's conflict of interest, and you're right. It's about the money and the power of the CAI, who is nothing but an over glorified lobbyist. They're just a lobbying firm. That's all they are, and that's all they've ever been. I don't think they've ever done one thing that has helped protect the homeowner.
We've got about 4 minutes left.
Okay.
In the 4 minutes, I mean, we've talked about the problems, and we talk about the problems here all the time. I have a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
Number one, do you see an end to this?
Unfortunately, I do not see an end to this. Not until the federal government steps in and create some kind of organization like we did with tenants and having a Tenant Landlord Act or like the Fair Credit Act. Until we have something like that, I don't think it's going to end in the foreseeable future, to be perfectly honest with you.
Is what they call CICs, common interest communities, or controlled, what I like to do is controlled communities with K's. Both of them with K's. Is it a viable form of housing, do you think, Dave?
You know, I don't. I don't think these things can sustain themselves. Especially with the thefts, the frauds, the embezzlement, the deferred maintenance because the association managers and the property management companies and or the boards, a lot of which are corrupt, they're not even keeping up with the maintenance and upgrades with the association that they should be. No, I don't think they're going to be survivable.
We have, I have someone coming on, Tyler Birding from California, who's been concerned about the lack of maintenance, and especially in conversion condos in San Francisco and Northern California. He's going to be on in a couple of weeks, and we're going to be talking about this. And you mentioned the fraud and the theft. I mean, he thinks that it's because homeowners don't want to pay additional assessments and special assessments. I think that it's a bigger issue.
I think it's a much bigger issue. Special assessments is just uncalled for. The minute you start getting hit with special assessments, that should be telling you that your HOA is not managing their money well. And a lot of this is mismanagement. You know, you'll have some company come out and do a reserve study on your property, and the guy will go up on the roofs and he'll inspect this, and all of a sudden you need a $20,000 roof, but don't worry about it. The guy who's doing this report for you just happens to have a brother-in-law in the roofing business and cut you a great deal on the roof. I've had it happen.
I guess you and I are pretty much on the same page here.
Yeah.
So you're saying that it's a red flag. Anytime you have a special assessment, you're dealing with a red flag.
You're dealing with a significant red flag. There, if your association was managing your money correctly and they were charging the right amount of dues and they were spending it wisely, you shouldn't receive a special assessment.
What about, for instance, in mine, and I'm glad because mine's an older association and it's tied to the CPI. The dues increases are tied to the CPI,
mm-hmm.
Consumer Price Index. And that
right.
means that, you know, if a loaf of bread costs 25 cents today and it costs 50 cents, you know, 20 years down the road, then you can only, you know, that's the thing. You double the assessment. So if your assessments were $10, you can go up to $20. Otherwise, you have to get permission from the homeowners.
Exactly.
Is that some people are whining about that, saying, well, you know, they didn't know what they were doing and things. Is that a good way of determining what the assessments should be?
Well, I think if you do a realistic reserve study, and I mean a realistic one from an independent company that isn't tied to the CAI or anybody else, I think that's a good guide as to, you know, what you need to be saving for. But this is the problem with HOA issues. They don't save.
Yeah.
They spin.
Yes.
They plant lavish gardens or install a fountain.
Yes.
But what they're not realizing, in 10 years, that roof needs to be replaced. That pool needs to be replaced. So a lot of what people probably misconceive as theft and embezzlement is just simply mismanagement and poor management of money.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
Good luck with your lawsuits.
Oh, thank you.
And please keep in touch.
I sure will.
Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.